This is Lena Live. Welcome, BBS. Welcome, my next program, Lena Live, and my tremendous excitement, which I have very hard time to hide because I have just extraordinarily gifted, not only because of his fame, but because of his tremendous music. Name which I will say with great joy, Mr. Jeff Berlin. And the name of my program today, I decided to call from Johann Sebastian Bach to Jeff Berlin. And the reason for that will be open through the program. And on this note, I just wanted to give a little flavor of this giant of jazz guitar. Some people feel that he is one of the greatest persona in the world playing and composing for this magnificent instrument. And I personally felt that his electricity, with tremendous amount of subtle feelings, with a giant sound and yet intimacy, eloquence, and intensity of expression, makes one just drown in his music. And what a pleasure, I would say privilege, even though it sounds too official, more of just sensational expectation of this very interesting program. I'd like to invite Jeff Berlin. Jeff, you're most welcome and pleased with your sound of voice and your music. Please introduce yourself.
Well, after that introduction, I feel like somebody should roll out a red carpet and put me in a nice limousine. That's the most beautiful introduction I ever had. Usually people will say, yeah, he's a nice bass player. What a nice guy, Jeff Berlin. But you made me feel like I was part of the royal family, Lena.
You certainly.
So I want to thank you.
Well, thanks as mine, because I truly had even difficult time to prepare for this program using some diligence and this usual classic order, because I started from your music. That's, of course, natural thing, which we're going to listen to.
Right.
But then I read about you, and I was just swimming in this remarkable information. Some of them made me feel that you are a modest giant. So not only you deserve red carpet, you deserve many other colors. So may I ask you first, what brought your world to the bass guitar?
It was really pragmatism. And what I mean is, I took the bass guitar as a young man, as a young boy, because I was tired of the time that I spent learning the violin. I took up violin in 1958 because there was a tradition that all Jewish boys who grew up in Long Island, Long Island, New York, if we exhibited a little bit of talent for music, inevitably we ended up with a violin. I did as well. And I was actually a very good violinist, and I played it for 10 years, but I finally got tired of the regiment. It's a very exact and very precise form of study, and I got weary of it. I was a kid, and I didn't want to really play this instrument anymore. But lucky for me, I came along at precisely the time that the Beatles played in America. I even saw that show live. I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan in 1964. And the bass guitar became an instrument that I wished to switch to because it had the same named strings. A violin is tuned G, D, A, E, from low to high. A bass guitar is tuned G, D, A, E, from high to low. So it's similarly tuned. It's, I think, one is a fourth, the others is a fifth. And I said, you know, it shouldn't be too hard to play, I thought, because I had just got done playing Mendelssohn and Beethoven and some sophisticated exercises. I was a fully trained, fully prepared for a career in classical music young violinist. And that's why I took the bass, because I wanted to be a rock and roll guy. I wanted to be in the Beatles. And so I got the instrument, and I am very happy and lucky that I did, because it is still as exciting to play the bass for me now at 57. I'm almost 58 years old. In January, I'll turn 58. And I'm still excited to play the bass. I'm like a kid. I go, wee, today I get to do a gig. Happy days, you know. So I still love it very, very much, Lena.
I have my answer, and it sounds perhaps a little bit pedantic that unless we have truly classical foundation, we will be somewhat a bit shallow going to some other genres or some other styles. But perhaps there is a very strong truth in that. And I personally have my answer because, indeed, the structure of your music, I'm using such a heavy word,
right. But
the structure in this music is just a fantastic backbone because you go to such extreme of emotional expression, and yet it's always together. And it's always together maybe because those little moments of your Bach and Beethoven and these classical years keep some of this in a wonderful frame of proportion. So I guess it's working for you to your benefit and also to the benefit of your highly modern, very freestyle, and yet so human.
Well, I thank you for that because I play an instrument that almost nobody listens to. And what I mean by that is we have several bass players in history that are very popular and very gifted bass players. The problem is that the people that listen to these bass players are pretty much bass players. Do you follow? So we call this an in-house reputation. These people establish themselves. I did too. I'm like them, where we all sort of function amongst the bass players in the world and other players sometimes who might be interested in the bass guitar. But what I've noticed is that nobody, and I'll emphasize this, nobody listening to this broadcast, unless they're a musician, nobody has ever really heard a bass guitar play a melody or really stand out as a unique instrument. And even in this day and age, I'm still trying to pass that humanity that you mentioned or try to find a producer of records, a pop record, a rock record, a blues record, a country record, and say to these guys, you know, you always give the solos on these records to the guitar player. But I have something quite unique. You know, it's not a bragging thing. I've worked 50 years to end up on the radio with you, Lena, and say that I've prepared something special, and I want to expose it to people. People ought to hear the beauty of this instrument and often don't have the chance to because radio doesn't play us. I tried to get on the Conan O'Brien show when he was on Saturday on NBC, and I tried for Jimmy Fallon, and I tried for Jay Leno, and Paul Schaefer on David Letterman is a friend of mine or with casual acquaintances. He put my name forward. None of these shows ever used me because I am not commercially successful. And the problem with commercial success is this is all that people are exposed to. And because I play an instrument that doesn't fit the commercial success vision that they have in America, people don't hear what I do, except for those people tuned in, like you very kindly said about me, people that have noticed that there's something special going on with a bass guitar. But in general, most people don't hear it. I would really like to change that. But so far, what I do is what I call an uphill battle because most people, unfortunately, aren't interested in music. They're interested only in music entertainment, and there is a difference.
Wow. What a powerful statement that is. And to be somewhat philosophical, I would say that we are living in times where those contradictions, where in one sense humanity craving and needs more of this artistic musical expression because they are so overly capitalized by technology and this material concept. And yet, where musicians are struggling to bring this gift Not even charging that much money for that.
It's
And
true.
yet, people are so reluctant to expand.
They're reluctant to expand because as a society, they haven't been told to expand. It's not the fault of the society, because society doesn't know how to function unless they're generally told what to do. The example that I have for that are the reality television shows that they have on television now. And what has happened is, if you watch, let's say, some of these shows, who is it, the Kardashian girls, I think, are on TV, the twins, or their sisters, they're very, you know, very attractive women, and that woman named Kendra who's on TV. And there are a bunch of these shows where principally America has embraced as stars and as people worthy of regard, have embraced people with no talent and little brains. And it amazes me that we as a society are fooled so easily. It's not that people shouldn't be entertained. It's just that the quality of entertainment has gotten so low that people embrace trash and non-talent and inability and call it significant. It's a really a testimony to the kind of the dumbing down of our society, and I personally object. I mean, wrestling, there are still people, I mean, they've announced it that it's a kind of a theater, but there are still some people that honestly believe wrestling is real. And there are still people who say that rappers are musicians. They're not. They're rappers. There is a difference that a lot of singers are musicians. They're not. They're singers. That's a difference. Lady Gaga is no musician. Madonna is no musician. These are singers, performers, and calling them that and removing the title musician would make people go crazy. But I don't really care what people respond to. I know the truth. And my idea is, why not allow music to enter into entertainment and function along with it? But you see, most producers and most record companies will never allow good music to exist along music entertainment. And the reason that they won't is because music entertainment makes money and music is a risky investment. And that's why Kendra is a huge hit. We have a woman with plastic in her breasts with not much of a brain, and she's a star. But if
I would say, interrupting you, you said it so beautiful. I feel that this brain in a plastic, which means brain in a breast, I call it.
Well, you know, I'm a man. I like looking at, you know, artificial breasts as much as the next man. But I would have to put it in its context. And the context is that, in my view, it is not worthy of regard as significant in regards of television entertainment. That's all. And again, that's a debatable point, I suppose, but I look at entertainment as being something, you know, worthy to regard. Television shows like Cheers, like Carol Burnett in its day. You follow what I mean? These
Absolutely.
Wonderful shows. Some of these nature shows, some of the stuff. I mean, good-looking girls. Hey, man, I like good-looking girls.
I do.
Huh?
Even I do. I'm a woman.
There you go. There you go. So music, and me as a bass player, I'm under siege. Because every time that I've gone to any opportunity, I wanted to do a show discussing music on CNN. They turned me down. I wrote to the guy. His name is Mark Burnett. He has a company called Burnett Productions, okay?
Burnett Productions. Yes, I heard of that, yes.
Mm-hmm. He produced a show called, Rock Fantasy Camp, where a bunch of rockers are there teaching kids how to play guitar. And I'll tell you straight, some of the information that these guys were offering bordered on voodooism. It was some of the most banal and inferior musical offerings. And it was put on TV, and it affects the society, it affects the general view of music, because they're telling these guys nonsensical points of view in order to learn how to play better. So I wrote this guy a letter, and I said, look, if it's entertainment, I guess we'll just put it in the, put your musical quality educational, you know, VH1 TV show, and put it equal with wrestling as a meaningful sport. In other words, it's an entertainment, so let's call it that, but it's not meaningful in regards to really helping anybody. And you should really consider doing a show where real music is offered. And predictably, he never responded. I mean, I'd no surprise there. So a lot of the times I've made attempts in order to reach, let's say, a broader public viewing where you can make music, the content of it, the teaching of it, the performance of it in the different styles is something to be viewed and regarded. But really, the truth is, none of these guys are interested. And they're not interested because music is not popular in America anymore. So I know I'm talking a lot here, but it's been on my mind. I've got to get it off my chest, Lena. So
I'm glad you found a wonderful opportunity, which prompted me to tell you that if you doubt the fact that you spoke for so long, please don't, because it's not the amount of minutes, it's a quality of the information. You know, in music, we are certainly obedient to timing, to time, but the timing is truly artistic expression. You took timing and time, and I'm so glad that you shared this with us. Personally, it resonate with me, unfortunately, very deeply, very strongly, and you couldn't be more right. And my only hope is that with greater realization of this somewhat a bit of a catastrophic emptiness of spiritual existence, people will show certain curiosity, because you cannot kill curiosity in people's spirit. And that's where you will be on the frontier, because what you do is, in one sense, it's very new, but yet it is so incredibly human, as I said before. And I like to actually to introduce the real source of who you are. I like very much to play a body and a soul, one of your pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And then after this, we will continue conversation, and we certainly will play some other of your music. And I tell you a little bit in advance, we will have a little bit of, I call it parallel surprise, which will hopefully bring your points even in a higher level. But for now, to go into your beautiful creation, I like to play this body and soul song and give you a little rest for us to enjoy your music. And then we will continue my conversation with Jeff Berlin, who is, I call him, modest giant in bass guitar and world of music.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
It feels almost brutal to introduce a speech again after this, just a heaven music. As a little bit of a classical musician, I would say that your harmony is just so sensational. I don't know if you know this terminology, like tonic dominant, sometimes subdominant.
I know this terminology, yes.
Yes, you're certainly using this. But only you know that you're using it. It's so beautifully masqueraded. I hear just incredible impressionistic colors and everything which your mind and imagination can allow to express. Could you tell us a little bit about this music, and then we will move to some other thoughts which I'd like to address a little later. But about this music.
It was inspired by Keith Jarrett, who is my greatest hero in music right now. When I became a bass player, I noticed that bass players really had very little repertoire to draw from to inspire us to, let's say, grow on our instruments. Guitars and the blues and jazz guitar have a lengthy background so that new musicians can always listen and learn from the previous great players. But the bass guitar didn't have anybody. Jaco Pastorius, who we all as bass players regard as, you know, the first and maybe the greatest bass player, because his style was so amazingly formed at such a young age. He was clearly brilliant. The problem with listening to Jaco is people for 20, 30 years were imitating him. And quite frankly, Jaco wasn't the soloist that he was regarded to be. Rather, he was maybe the greatest comping bass player in funk and R&B and that type of thing. That, and his compositions and his fretless original sound, you know. But soloing wasn't really his thing, and the solos that he was regarded for, were composed solos. He would write them out, practice them, and record them. Donna Lee or some on his solo record, or a couple of Weather Report. So in my case, I recognize that I can't listen to Jaco because he's such a powerful influence, and I didn't want to listen to any other bass player to be influenced in regards to harmony and melody, because I didn't really believe that bass players really knew a lot about it. But I noticed that horn players, the saxophone players and the pianists, all function from that source. They must know harmony and they must know melody in order to perform the solos that they play on their instruments. So these are the guys that I listened to, and these are the guys that influenced me. I would play solos that I have a very, very good ear, and I could write out solos from piano, and I wrote out a lot of Keith Jarrett. And from the solos that I've written out, I would play them on the bass. I've done this for decades. And I started to play solos that were not usual and really not very comfortable to play on a bass guitar. They were out of position constantly and not flowing in a manner that a pianist would flow, because I play a symmetrically tuned instrument. And these solos don't make really great sense here. And so what happened is at least I began to get a better overview of sounding different on a bass guitar playing a melody. I mean, any decent singer plays a better melody, sings a better melody than many of us bass players play. So that influenced me, and that became eventually the inspiration to do this CD, the High Standards Jazz CD, because Keith Jarrett could change my personal world. Every time I heard any solo or anything he played, he was of such a high quality, maybe alone in the world in his uniqueness and greatness, that I tried to, if I couldn't be close to him as a player, maybe I could be halfway as close. You follow? So any accomplishment to raise me up as a bass player from listening to Keith or Cannonball Adderley or Sonny Rollins, or these are the heroes to me, because they were the great players who knew melody and harmony. And that legacy became evident in, let's say, this last piece that you just heard, the Body and Soul?
Body and Soul, and I hope that I pleased you with my selection. I really had a hard time to pick up certain pieces from your CD, for which, by the way, I thank you so, so much that you did send it to me. But I hope that this is one of the so, so many revealing this background which you did share with us. And in fact, you made it so convenient for me to make one parallel at that, a little surprise, which I'm so inspired to share with you.
Okay.
There is a one piece which is not part of your CD, but I just found out going a little bit extra because I was incredibly mesmerized by your music.
Wow.
And that's called Bach Crossroads. And that piece totally turned me upside down. In fact, I had a little extra time to come back to Down Upside. So I like to inject a little bit of excitement. Not that you're missing any excitement in life, if anything, you are full of it. But to, I guess, just to add a little spice to the program, I like to play this piece, Bach Crossroads, the way you played it.
Well, the name of the piece is Bach. It's actually the C minor prelude.
Exactly.
I did it as because it's part of the repertoire that I'd heard, so I added it and made it electronic and a little more like that. It's true. Mm-hmm. And then we arranged a little middle section to it to change the piece. And
yes.
It's off a CD called Crossroads, which is a compilation of my first two solo records.
Forgive
me. So the piece is actually called Bach.
Bach, well, forgive me, I my excitement blinded me to separate those two names. However, it didn't change any contents of it. And if you would not mind, I'd like to play this piece now.
Yes, my dear.
And then to actually play another version of it, the original version, which was written by Bach for well-tempered clavier.
That's
for
correct.
The piano. So I think it is most fascinating, and to be, I will use this word very cautiously, but intimately open with you, saying that this is a whole concept, whole cliche of work we are doing here with our music company, where we connect, which has been disconnected.
Okay.
I cannot imagine a better example of you presenting your statue in 21st century, and yet you're making such quick leap into Bach music, where certainly Renaissance and pre-Baroque finds it such a wonderful home in your music. And then we will hear the source of your inspiration for that.
Oh,
but
sure.
Before that, I just wanted to say this something which truly killed me, because the way you played it made me feel that this is an organ in the hands of one soul, one person, one
musician.
Well,
there is an organ or a keyboard in it. I played it on the bass, and I think there's a guitar player who plays it too, Frank Gambale. So, yeah, we were a quartet when we did it.
So I am going, I'm rushing to play Bach.
Are you going to play my version first, or are you going to play the piano version first?
You always come in first.
Oh, because I was going to say, you know, if you want to, you can play the piano first so people can hear the original and then see what we did with it afterward.
Wonderful thought, wonderful idea. Then if you will forgive me, since you are my guest, in fact, perhaps we're in a good competition here. Bach is first, and then Berlin is second.
Yes, let's play that.
That is a wonderful codetta, which brings me now to your Bach. Wow, This is just a firework of all centuries.
That's a pretty powerful piece. I haven't heard that in a while. It was done, well, I think, in 1986 or 87, you know?
Something like that. And I have to confess, I gave very hard time to your publicist because I did demand this piece.
I'm flattered that you did. And gee whiz, if they could put this on as, you know, the new theme song for the new Will Smith movie. You know, I'm joking, but the idea is to let people hear, not just me, but, you know, musicians that have made some powerful music. You're just not going to hear it because people don't get, let's say, support from the record or entertainment industry. It's a shame. That's some strong stuff. I haven't heard that in a long time. And there are other phenomenal musicians. Ah, better than me, better than what we do. There's some great players, and they should be heard. They should be subsidized. You know, can't those record sales by Lenny Kravitz subsidize a little bit some of the art that isn't fall into his brand of rock and roll? I mean, I really wish that we would get a little more sensible about the art and let's be heard and have that. But I have my opportunity on your radio show to sort of, you know, speak my mind. I know it's really not ever going to really happen, but
you know, let me interject.
Go
this.
Ahead, please.
Don't say this. I think perhaps it's somewhat the word I'm looking for is something utopia, dream. But you know, the more we have of expressions like yourself, this devotion, and we're working here right now on a certain establishment, and my personal goal is indeed not to give birth, because birth was given by such a genius like yourself, but to let people know and to hear what they're missing. And yes, of course, it does require a terrible amount of time and the finance. We're not getting much of a support at all, and this economy does not help. But if I will be just for the moment optimistic, because in fact I'm incredibly inspired by your music, that perhaps with a joint effort, little by little, we will find our own grounds, because by God's will, whatever is good should find a place on this planet. And I have to tell you that, to remind you that there are a number of people who gave you a tremendous amount of praise.
Yeah,
and
that's a great honor. It really is.
Yes, so maybe you can take a little better advantage of it, because, for example, a person by name Geddy Lee called you the best bassist on the planet.
I owe him money.
Okay.
He wants to get paid his money. So I told him I'll pay him when I can get it. And he said, well, if I compliment him, maybe he'll pay me. Listen, I'm just a complainer right now. So
no, you're not complaining.
I'm just being a complainer. You know, I'm actually okay with my situation. I really am. I knew all the time what the reality is. I'm almost just having a little fun on the air to kind of, we call it bitch and moan, you know.
Yes.
I'm almost taking sort of a pleasure out of my little complaints. But I'll tell you the honest truth. I'm okay, Lena. I'm going to Central and South America tomorrow. I have almost a 3-week tour, you know, through Central South America. Next year I'm in Europe, and next year I'm in Asia, and then I'm recording again. You know, I have nothing to complain about. I just sort of fantasize, you know, the opportunity to do more for music. So, you know, I want to clarify this. And as for Geddy Lee saying that, Geddy's a friend of mine. Geddy doing what he did, he just did it as a kindness. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, but you don't have just him. You have a few others. For example, Robert Silverstein said that his standards adds up to one of the most engaging examples of mainstream modern jazz in the recent history.
Now, I owe him money, too.
Okay, well, you have a beautiful explanation, but you know, in our times, when they put their words on the paper, that means a little bit more than the money, because they're risking their prestige, and you're nourishing them very beautifully.
Okay,
I, however, like to bring something else. I can judge that you are treasuring your mother and that you're very close to her, because you said something so charming and so sweet. You said that it gets a bit depressing when the only person in the world telling people how special I am as a bass player is my mother. So, listen, if your mother treasures you, I understand it doesn't make your bank account bigger, but it probably warms your soul that much better. So tell us a little bit about your parents, a little bit about your background.
My background is an interesting one. My father grew up in Belgium and had the bad luck of growing up Jewish in Belgium just around the time of the war. And my grandparents were deported to Auschwitz. That's another story that Getty and I have in common, because his parents also went through that situation. But my father ran. He was not arrested, but interestingly, he was sentenced to death twice and escaped the Germans two times before they executed him. He is and was an astonishingly tough and dangerous man when he grew up. He grew up very hard in Europe, and it some people it breaks you. In my father's case, it made him, I mean, the term dangerous is applicable. He is or was a very dangerous guy. And there's a million stories to share, but it's hardly, you know, radio time now. I mean, he was just we call in America, a badass, and you better watch out. And he came to America, met my mother, who came, I would say, from a slightly troubled background. They met, married, had children, and I was raised in what I would consider a slightly troubled background, because when you get two people who have difficulties, they're bound to pass these on to their children. So in my adult years, I had to go to therapy to heal, I would say, some of the less healthier lessons. But the truth is, you know, we're very close, my mother and my father. They're in their late 80s. They're still alive. My father plays golf. He's a strong virile. Is that a Freudian slip? He's a virile guy, and my mother is strong and healthy. They're both sharp as a tack, and my father got me into music, although my natural musical capabilities, if one can sort of detect the direct lineage of where that comes from in terms of DNA, came from my mother, not my father. My mother had a phenomenal ear. And so my background is interesting, you know, and I kind of grew up a little scrappy and a little bit under pressure, and had to go to therapy in order to learn how to be happy. I didn't even know how to be happy. I had to actually go and figure it out. So, you know, therapy works. Don't you doubt it. It's one of the greatest, healingest, naturally gifted for anyone in dilemma opportunity. When I see these movies and these poor people who going around in psychological torment, there's such an available opportunity to heal and get rid of these ghosts. So, in a way, I owe a lot to my family from the guidance that I had gotten that guided me into music and actually a great mental health and balance. I'm a changed man, and I love my folks very much, and my father and I call each other and we tell jokes, and then every once in a while he'll say, you know what happened to me in Italy? There was these guys, and they tried to... And he tells these stories that would make the hair on your head stand up. So he's an astonishing guy. They put this guy on a line to be shot, and he escaped. And they put my father, they put this guy in a prison to be executed, and he got out of the prison. So let me tell you, it makes for an interesting background, because I had to grow up sort of in this tough, hard environment, and it was interesting, I'll tell you that much. but music
well,
was my salvation.
I will tell you that God bless you with this passion for music, and forgive me for being presumptuous. I feel that that therapy which you've been talking about worked for you, because you've been predisposed already, if not to solve, but to find some of your answers, comfort, power of expression in your talent and in your music. So I, again, being presumptuous, I wanted to tell you that it's because of your background and because with all this tough, incredibly personal, complicated challenges which your parents experienced, you've been able to transform this inside of yourself, going through certainly very sharp bumps, but find this abstract solution for yourself and giving the world your sharing with such incredible, powerful talent.
Gee whiz, Lena. Well,
that's how I feel, really.
Well, yeah, I took lemons and made lemonade, and the music is a healing thing. It was a refuge, and it was always what I wanted to do. I mean, since I got my bass, I can't say I wanted to be a musician when I was a violinist. Although, no, you know what? I just remembered something. I quit the violin for a couple of months because I didn't want to do it anymore. And I just realized, I went to my folks, I was like 11 or something, and I started crying, and I said, I got to play. You got to get me back my violin. And the interesting thing was, this was before I had gotten a bass guitar, but I was so in need of playing some instrument. Man, I hadn't thought of that in 50, 45 years, that there was a moment where I was, thank God I don't have to play violin anymore because my folks let me quit. And a few weeks later, I remember actually crying. You know, I was a little boy. I want to play something. I got to play my instrument. And I went back to the violin for another couple, 3 years, and that's when I got my bass guitar. But I guess it's true. I really was called to play. I don't know about success and stardom and whatever else, but to play an instrument, I do admit that I feel like I was actually made to be a player or to be a musician. It's a joyous thing to know really early what your life's calling is going to be. Don't you agree?
Not only I agree, but to make some kind of logical progression, you started as a child already programmed with a tremendous rich life because of your parents. Then you've been searching with a tremendous friend, which is music. You started with a violin, which is rather awkward position to be in, because to play violin, you really have to be a little bit twisted in your position. I'm not talking about mind or any other part of life.
Yeah, it's an awkward
instrument.
And
then you found your harmony, which is bass guitar.
Oh, yes.
And by the way, your voice is a bass, your guitar is a bass, and it's foundation for your fantastic music and creation.
Right. Yeah, it's true, and the thing is that melody and harmony made the bass far more meaningful to me, because I'm a good rhythm section bassist, you know, playing parts.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
Smoke
on the Water or whatever, you know, a bass part. I can play. I'm a good R&B bassist.
And yes,
these things came early, but what the discovery to find different ways to express oneself, you know, on the instrument. The instrument, as I say, isn't designed, nor is it really approached in the same way that one will approach a tenor saxophone. And because it isn't, there's a whole new wide open world there. There's so much incredible material to regard in order to open those doors, and that's what I still do, because I still can't figure out a lot of the ideas of Michael Brecker, but I'm a cheat. I will take a piece of music paper and write out some of those thoughts and ideas and practice them, or Keith's piano solos, you know, I'll write those out, or Gary Burton. You know, I adore Gary Burton's vibes. He's one of the most astonishingly gifted, maybe the greatest jazz soloist of the 21st century in many regards. A lot of people know him, but a lot of people listening to our interview don't know him. He's one of the most gifted, almost standing alone musicians that I've ever known. And yet, because he plays the vibes, it's going to be the Burton fanatics that will see him, and he might not be heard either. You want to hear a story about President Obama and me?
Wow.
No, it's not that. It's a bigger build-up than the truth. Let me tell you this story.
Please do so. I hope BBS will give us an extra time. I've been seduced by your story. Please do so. That will bring extra spice to the program.
Are we done with the interview? It is going late. I do have a big mouth and I talk too much. So.
No, you're not. Please share this story.
Okay, it's a quick story. It's nothing amazing, but here's the story. When he became elected as president, they had sometime afterward a television show, and they produced it as a musical show from the White House, and I'm not sure of the name, you know, live from the White House. And they had Stevie Wonder. They had, what was the name? Paul Simon, right? They had a bunch of artists there, legendary artists, I might add, all of whom were singers. And the show was wonderful. You can't but have a fantastic performance when Stevie Wonder's playing and singing. Okay, he did Superstition, and you know, and I can't remember who else they had. They had a few guys, but every last musician on that gig was a singer. There were no players. So I, being the silly guy that I am, carefully scripted a letter to Barack Obama's, and I found out that it was a lady named Smoots, I think her name is, who is the head of the social office at the White House. She's the person, apparently, who organizes, you know, the events that go on. So I sent her a letter, and I said, dear, you know, madam, or to you and to the president, I said, it's true that this show obviously showcased some of the legends of music, but I said, do you realize that the music, the only, I might add, the only art form ever invented in this country, ever invented in America, was music. The only thing we came up with was an African-American creation, was the blues, was early rock, you know, that music, R&B. The only thing we created is music. And I said, and do you realize that the greatest musicians in America, who are legends of their instrument and who are the finest players possibly in the world, cannot ply their living in this country? I said, they have to go out of the country because people in this country don't support the players, not like they used to, but they don't support the players in this era. And I said that when you have these shows and you showcase these wonderful singers, you are also ignoring the fact that you might be able to raise the consciousness of great players in America by having a show and having a great harmonica player, a great pianist. I mean, usually if they're going to do a great pianist, it's always going to be Herbie Hancock anyways. So as much as Herbie, he's always the greatest, and we know it. I know that too. But there is a kind of a cliche element that's happening here. There are a lot of musicians that ought to be showcased other than perhaps the number one pianist in the world, you see?
Yes.
He's the number one guy.
Absolutely.
He is literally the leader of anybody who plays an instrument. And there are lots and lots of other pianists and other guitarists and other sax players and other bassists. And do you think Jimi Hendrix would make a living in this era? He wouldn't even get a deal with an indie level, with an indie record level, you know, level recording contract, because this era is not interested in guitar players. And I can prove it. If you look at any band, you will never see a guitar solo being featured today, just about. It almost is impossible. I saw the Grammys. What was it, last year? And they had on the Grammys, this is the organization and the television show representing the entire cream of all the music that they've elected for recognition. You ready for this? There wasn't a single solo by any instrumentalist on the Grammys. That shows you that vocals are dominant and that
yes.
playing in music is definitely not regarded anymore. So I
absolutely.
Said this.
Absolutely.
It is true. And I said this to Obama.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And all these American idols and America has talents, all of this. This is a singing. As if other instruments don't exist. You're absolutely correct.
It is true. And, of course, the president predictably, I guess he had other things on his plate, too. You know, these guys aren't interested, and neither are the Mark Burnetts, and neither are, you know, they're not interested. So if I figure I get a little bit of an opportunity to make some pressure, just to make conscious this little debate. You see what I'm saying? You're doing a service here, Lena, and so is your radio show, because it's making conscious a principle that is not discussed and not regarded in America. Nobody talks about it. No record company people, no record executives, no musicians. But guys like me, and we've, you know, a lot of guys sort of gave up the fight. You know what I mean? The spirit is kicked out of us, you know, as a group. We go to Europe. That's where we play. We don't play in America. They don't like us in America. They don't like players. They wouldn't like Hendrix in America. Not today they wouldn't. Not today they wouldn't. Eric Clapton, he'd be working a tiki hut at Clearwater Beach, Florida, singing Jimmy Buffett songs. In this era, he would not be the legend that he is today, especially as a guitar player, because people don't care about playing. And sorry to be this blunt. So anyways, Obama didn't respond. Burnett didn't respond. But I'm just taking a little bit of time trying to be a spokesperson for good music, and maybe it'll make an impact somewhere.
And I hope that we will cooperate in this powerful voice, which perhaps has more of emotional, mental power than commercial, but I have a faith that with the people like yourself, yes, I am very devoted, and thank you for bringing this point. Yes, one of the points of my radio career is to give this spectacular awareness of necessity, mm-hmm. of recognition, of
yes.
reawakening of these great talents, which are not just there by themselves, but we are, as a people, need to not only to benefit, but to survive, to thrive, and to succeed as a human being, without which we just will not be as nourished and as humanly prosperous.
Right.
So because time is really, time is ticking, and I feel really very awkward to finish our program. So let's say it starts. Let me be humble and to say that we will continue this discussion.
Yes, dear.
I have a great desire to play more of your music. In fact, we get just a fabulous conversation. I cannot thank you enough.
Oh, I enjoyed every second. Thanks for the opportunity. It's very kind of you. It really is, and I greatly appreciate it, honey.
Well, no, thank you so much. But I just wanted to tell you that I'm looking forward to the next program, and I plan to play your other song, If I Were a Bell, then to play this waltz, sentimental. So we're going
play,
to...
Play Groovin' High. That's a fun song.
Okay, then I will certainly do this next time. Unfortunately, we're over time, which I didn't even notice because of a stormy communication I have with you.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to thank you again for the fact that you, not only that you've been so honest and so open,
yeah.
but also for the fact that you've been so sincere. And we didn't even touch other of other aspects of your life. You're a wonderful teacher. You have a school. You have a wonderful concept there. So I hope that we will have another program in a very, very near future. But now I have to say, unfortunately, until soon. I don't say goodbye, but I would say until soon. And I wanted to thank very much BBS who gave me this opportunity for the extra time, and say goodbye to Jeff, even though it is definitely until soon. And I personally had very memorable time with this great musician, extremely mother's giant, as I call him. And again, with this opportunity to share this very relevant, vital thoughts about our society, humanity, which cannot survive without music. So this was another edition of Lina Live. I'm your Lina Mirmont. And until next Tuesday, I will say sadly goodbye, but I will also will say with my great smile, until very soon, which is Tuesday. Thank you for listening.